In an age of algorithms, what does it mean to stay human? Where does imagination go when our world is reduced to screens and scripts? And how do we preserve our inner worlds, our creativity, our connection, our consciousness, when so much around us is designed to distract and divide? In this episode of Born to Know, I sit down with Laura Metsu, a psychospiritual coach, writer, and healer whose personal awakening invites us to ask some of the deepest questions of our time. Laura shares how a period of intense inner transformation opened her eyes to the hidden forces shaping our lives, from collective trauma to the psychological effects of technology and the energetic imprints we carry from the past. Through her unique lens, including tools like evolutionary astrology, she helps map out the terrain of soul growth in a rapidly shifting world. But this conversation is about more than just healing. It's about remembering. Remembering how to think for ourselves, how to parent consciously in a digital age, how to reclaim imagination as a sacred act of resistance. We talk about the rise of AI and its quiet cost on human creativity and the subtle propaganda of the pandemic era, and how to find our way back to the body, to intuition, and to each other. If you've been sensing that something deeper is at stake in this moment, not just politically or socially, but spiritually, this episode will speak to that knowing. And if you're enjoying Born to Know, please take a brief moment to drop a review and share the show with a friend. Hey, Laura, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, great to talk to you again.
It's a pleasure to be here with you and talking. And I have so many things I'd like to chitty chat about. We were just off camera talking about ChatGPT. I read your piece that you wrote about how, you know, it's just reshaping the way that we engage with information, obviously, and, you know, how it's potentially shaping our experience and perception of the world. And, you know, it's part of this greater agenda, which we'll get into. But I actually wanted to start out by visiting with your experience and how you got into this work and in this path, you know, the momentum that you initiated. I know I was listening to one of your episodes on your podcast, which is incredible, and I'll link it in the show notes. But how you went through this kind of like breaking point and how an entire world opened up for you as far as healing, you know, the psycho-spiritual realm.
Yeah. So astrologically, it was around 27, which is actually, everyone talks about the Saturn return that happens at like 28, 29. This is actually even more intense. It's called the reverse nodal return, where the nodes are opposite to your natal nodes, which is like your planet of destiny. So I was recovering from severe opiate addiction, like really long decade or so of trauma and bad relationships. And basically things got so bad that I turned to God. And then when I did, stuff opened up for me. My life started turning around. I think that deeper surrender that they talk about, I wasn't in AA, but that deeper surrender they talk about AA is a metaphysical truth that you need to kind of give it all up to God. And that was in 2012. So, you know, I had to rebuild my life, like physically, emotionally, spiritually. I sought deeper healing beyond even the conventional medical system because I was very disillusioned with the psychiatric system and just putting people on drugs. I was even a little bit disillusioned with like conventional therapy as well. So I started self-healing and going on a path of healing myself, doing all the things that you do, the ayahuasca ceremonies, the, you know, the going to India, et cetera. And yeah, eventually I just ended up in this place where I was very different to how I was before. I started helping others and started, you know, doing my own psycho-spiritual training. I took Compassion and Inquiry with Gabor Mate. I've taken another training called psychosynthesis coaching, which basically is a psycho-spiritual modality of training, evolutionary astrology, and just kind of fell into it because people were coming to me. Like I was always doing like astrology readings here and there. But I just realized that people were looking for healing beyond just psychological healing or beyond just physical healing, like wellness stuff. They were looking for some sort of spiritual also understanding of the world. So yeah, that's kind of what led me to the work that I do with my husband now.
Yeah. And I've heard you talk a lot about generational soul work, you know, as far as like the generation of, you know, Pluto and Scorpio, for example. We can go there because I think we share that, right?
Oh, yeah. Scorpio too. Yeah. I mean, we're really here to not only go through trauma ourselves, but to bring trauma healing, even shamanic healing to the world. Like, I really feel that the Pluto, like there's a lot of generations outside Pluto and Scorpio who can also do this, but you know, every Pluto generation that's alive here right now has an important part to play in this specific time period and evolution of consciousness. And that's one thing I see the Pluto and Scorpio people brought in.
Yeah. I mean, how are we uniquely positioned, let's say?
Childhood trauma, most of us. I think that's kind of like the initiation. It's like you go through something, you know, where, you know, we had this whole even epidemic of sexual abuse that happened in the period of like the late 80s to early 90s too. More awareness around that, you know. So I think that was the initiation for me. Like, if I wasn't suffering so much, if it didn't show up so much in my relationships, I probably wouldn't have even turned to healing in a deeper way or turned to God. So I really see it as a blessing in disguise. But I feel like this generation, you know, from I think it's 84 when I was born until 1995, I believe, like our journey is one of being dragged to the underworld and having to rebirth ourselves from that experience. So, you know, Scorpio likes to learn through extremes situations. It's not actually where we need to evolve to, but that's kind of what our comfort zone is. So I'm sure you can feel this too, is like Pluto and Scorpio people get very calm and centered in very intense situations, right? Because they're just so used to handling the chaos. You know, we need to evolve through the Taurus archetype to create more safety and stability, and especially in our bodies. But it's definitely the comfort zone when you grow up in chaotic childhood experiences, or, you know, you go through something really intense even later on in life, like and you work with it, obviously, you can develop a certain resilience that I think even, especially during COVID, was like really critical, because, you know, there's people who needed to really be able to stay centered when things got really crazy, because, you know, people have still lost their minds from what happened over the past 5 years. I can see it.
Yeah. So how do you see like the tool of astrology, which is ancient? And we could go a little bit into that, but how do you see and understand that framework for us understanding the soul's path, understanding contracts, understanding karmic lessons in this lifetime? Because the way that I look at it is, I don't think like this lifetime is about avoiding experiences that are going to traumatize me. Maybe that is the Pluto and Scorpio, right, speaking, but I'm not like, oh, I'm trying to prevent that. I'm like, how do I alchemize that? Because, you know, if I remove, you know, in simple terms, if I kind of set the ego aside, I know that there is a soul path that I set out to experience. And I wonder if, you know, the framework of astrology is what gives me the aspects to be able to complete that. You know, is that how you would see it? Because I know some people don't believe in astrology. Of course, it's fine. There's like a religious conflict there, I guess. But many people do use it as a tool to understand how to navigate and find that essence of the soul's path.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously there's a whole group of people who think it's demonic now. So there's that whole thing going on. But aside,
I didn't hear about that.
Oh, you didn't hear that? Okay. But regardless, you know, I don't use it definitively, because evolutionary astrology works on the premise that depending on your level of consciousness, your soul, your lessons, your chart could play out very different than someone who has the exact same chart as you, but is a different level of consciousness. And that's one thing that evolutionary astrology looks to suss out. So basically, there's like a consensus, a mainstream level, I guess you could say. And this is not to like put in a hierarchy, it's just like how it manifests, right? Some people need to actually learn how the world works, how to get along in the world. So that's the first phase, and there's phases within that. And then there's the individuated level, which has a very different expression. So like Venus and Scorpio, for example, which you and I both have, right? On a consensus level, on an unhealed level, that would be like a lot of trauma bonding, a lot of drama in relationships, attraction to taboo experiences. Like, you know, it can have all sorts of things across the spectrum. But usually on the consensus level, it will operate in a more unconscious way. So you're going to see people who like get into these magnetic relationships that are, you know, often like trauma bonded in some way, and they can learn and grow from that. And hopefully they move to the next phase, which is individuated. And so individuated Pluto and Scorpios tend to get to the point where they start to help others. They're working in some sort of depth work, whether it's just assisting others through intense experiences or just being able to hold that space for other people. And then there's a spiritualized level, which would be more like getting involved in like esoteric kind of, you know, maybe depth psychology, like shadow work, etc. So like the way that I use astrology is very different to like a traditional astrologer who would be like, this and this means this, this is what's going to happen to you. I really feel like there's a lot of free will in how our charts manifest if we become conscious, basically. So I use astrology not as a tool to like tell people how they are, but more to see like, how can we evolve your consciousness? Like, where are you showing up within these karmic patterns, basically? Because it is karmic astrology, evolutionary astrology, it looks at past lives, etc. And like, how can we move you to like maybe a healthier manifestation or like the next level of individuation? Does that make sense?
Yeah. When I've spoken with astrologers and, you know, I have my south node in Libra, they say that I'm coming from lifetimes of, you know, dynamics where the south node in Libra kind of dictates or has dictated the way that I engage in family and relationships and things like that. And so actually, I mean, how many lifetimes would one spend? Is that like multiple lifetimes in that south node?
Yeah, because your north node is like actually qualities you haven't developed, if unless you have a planet there, obviously. But if you have south node in Libra, if you think about it on like as like beads on a necklace, like, you know, and each bead is representing past lives, right? Like think of like all the past like 30 or 50 beads had like a Libra theme. It doesn't mean it was exact same thing, but it was focused on relationships, the other. Obviously the shadow of that is like codependency, sacrificing yourself for another. I also have Venus conjunct south nodes, different because, but a similar manifestation where like, you know, one of the biggest lessons is, you know, transforming the way that you approach relationships, you know, having that balance of self and other, codependency, people pleasing, which I had to definitely break out of the past 5 years out of pure survival. So there's all sorts of patterns that are ongoing there that need to be like done in a different way in order to move towards the north node. Like you don't just leave behind that Libra south node. You have to like evolve it to a different level of reality. And then that also helps you with your, you know, separation, individuation process with the north node in Aries, for example, which is really about like learning how to even like, what are my own needs? Like, what do I want? Like, because Libra south node, people would be so used to like focusing on what the other person wants, they can literally lose themselves in the process and not even know anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Or like, if someone were to ask them, like, what do you want your life to look like? It's whole, like, I am not sure unless I like, see myself in contrast to my partner, like that they will be the ones who will help me figure out how I respond, you know, how I respond to them will give me information about what I want to do. It's fascinating because I know other people with the similar nodes and it's, yeah, it's a common theme for sure. What was going on? Like when the pandemic started, like what was happening astrologically?
Well, the Saturn-Pluto conjunction happened. That was in, when was that? Beginning of 2020. I was in a meditation retreat actually when this all went down. And yeah.
So did you come out of it like to the reality of this new world, or did you hear about it while you were there?
Well, like basically it was all kind of heating up while I was in the meditation retreat. So I flew there, nothing was going on. But then when I left 2 weeks later, You know, everyone was wearing masks. And then I went back to LA where we were living with my husband at the time. And, you know, the stores were becoming empty and it was just the madness, right? So it was really intense because I don't know if you've gone to a meditation retreat, but you leave and you're very sensitive to the world. And it was like, almost like, I was just so blown away by what I was seeing because I was feeling like a little bit more detached and objective. And I remember when that Saturn-Pluto conjunction happened, because I was in the meditation retreat and we did a podcast way back with this astrologer who actually ended up passing recently, Michael Luton, who really talked about like there was a specific condition of the Saturn-Pluto conjunction that really kicked off the whole pandemic that was like this weird occultation and this weird kind of dark energy coming in. And I actually felt that in the meditation retreat when it hit exact, because everyone was talking about it, you know, meditation retreats, they kind of know a little bit about astrology. And I could just feel some kind of weird, like ominous energy enter the space. And then the meditation retreat ended shortly after. And I just saw everyone with masks and it was like, oh my God, what the hell is going on? You know, my husband, who's also a sun in Aquarius, like when we were in Whole Foods and like the people were losing their minds, buying the toilet paper was like wanting to scream at people. Cause like you could see the mass psychosis kicked in so fast, right? Like people were really freaking out and, you know, luckily we were on the same page and we didn't really want to be a part of it, you know? And yeah, I mean, that was just the craziest. Like I've been through so much. It's interesting because like my life was finally stable by the time this happened, but then the world like went all crazy. And like, I was like, oh my God, like finally my life is at a better place, but now the world is going insane. So you know, me and my husband were very outspoken, trying to warn people about the vaccine. Hopefully someone listened. No one in our family listened. They all took it anyway. But, you know, he could see the writing on the wall because my husband's very aware of different things in the world and conspiracies, you know. And it really, really woke me up too. Like, I have to say, like, I was really, you know, I lost most of my friends. My family thinks I'm insane because I was very outspoken. But I was just so shocked at how quickly everyone fell for the narrative and fell in line. Like that was more just that, that was more the most, I think, shocking thing. I was like, wow, like people are really under this spell, this mass psychosis.
I would say it was similar for me, is the shock was how easy it was for everyone to engage the story, you know? Like it wasn't like, of course it wasn't like the, you know, the thing itself. Like I didn't even care. Like it really didn't even impact me personally. It was just the shock of how everyone suddenly, yeah, running through the grocery stores and like people canceling things and people, I can't go to the funeral and I can't have my wedding anymore. And I won't be able to see my mother on her deathbed because I'm not allowed to, you know, enter the hospital. And it was all, you know, and in my birth space, of course, it was like, I can't have anyone there. I have to birth alone. And so then I saw this huge surge of home birth with people who had been historically so conventional medically, or like, I'd rather birth at home than be in this situation where I'm like deeply controlled and have to birth alone, you know? So I saw a lot of, you know, transformation happening for some people. And then some people kind of went, you know, more deeply wedged into the narrative. But I felt like such an observer during that time. But yeah, it was very shocking how quickly everyone was so, and I actually went to Sedona, to your neck of the woods, in June 2020. I said, I have this trip planned and there's like no way I'm canceling. Like I'm going, you know, I'm doing this road trip through, you know, New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, California. And I, you know, fortunately my family, except for one family member, was like, there's no way I'm participating in this either. You know, but that's how I grew up, thankfully, right? Like, you know, my mom was always like reading me David Icke and we were always going to these like conventions and all the stuff.
Mom
so
like, yeah, totally switched on.
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, she's a homeopathic practitioner and, you know, it's just, there was incredibly rebellious in so many ways. And so it was just like, yeah, we're not even going to talk about this.
Yeah. I was more surprised too, because, you know, I grew up, like my parents were hippies. They were part of the whole 60s, 70s, like hippie movement, right? And you know, I was also raised like very alternatively. But I'm really surprised because there seems to have been this whole switch where like formerly you thought that like the left liberal were like anti-pharmaceutical, et cetera. But then they just completely became this like pro-vaccine, like kind of party almost like in the past few years. And that's not how I knew it to be before. So like I didn't change. I've always been a little bit skeptical, well, not a little bit, a lot skeptical of a lot of mainstream medicine just from my own experiences. But I was just so surprised that there was this whole almost like cultural shift, like where like at one point, if you were left, if you were like anti-pharmaceutical, anti-big pharma, you were leftist, but now that makes you like conservative. Like, and I'm not like either, I don't like to label myself, but I just found that interesting, this whole cultural shift that happened. And I honestly think, I've been thinking about it recently, especially with Pluto and Aquarius now. And then we have Uranus in Gemini and Neptune in Aries. So all the outer planets, the generational planets are about to change signs. And you can see, you know, with the AI thing we were talking about earlier, that like the whole world is literally going through a rebirth process. And we're actually still in the limbo phase right now. And this is going to show up in our personal lives and collectively. But I think that like even me, like knowing kind of the astrology and other astrologers who can kind of see what's going on, I think we really underestimate what happened then and what is still happening and like what monumental shift that we're in with this new technological revolution that's also about to follow. So it's like kind of things needed to be destroyed to prepare for some new era that we're still in the kind of in between technically.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I grew up going to the Mount Madonna School in Santa Cruz, California, and it was all, you know, followers and community of Baba Hari Das. They want, you know, they started a school up there in their community because they didn't want to participate in, you know, society in the kind of run of the mill way. And so they didn't want their children to go to a regular school. So they created this school, and that's where I went to school. And when the pandemic started, it was like they went full mask, full proof of vaccination. Oh. I mean, and I mean, even to get to see Joe Dispenza, you had to show proof of vaccination, right? Seriously, like I was like, what's going on here? I thought we could heal with our minds. I thought that these things, you know, like, so yeah, I saw the kind of like typical, you know, 1960s, 1970s hippie go full on into pandemic mode. But yeah, that's also because, you know, the boomer generation who were these, you know, like ex-Jewish, ex-Christian, ex-religious who found, you know, Eastern philosophy, like had built these communities, but they still hold this kind of like subservience to the system, the medical system.
Yeah, at one point they were like counterculture, but now they're the consensus, basically. I think that's kind of what happened at like one point, but now they're like the yuppies. They're the people who maintain the status quo. So, you know, and I think that's the whole thing, is actually the younger generations are actually the ones who are meant to bring a new energy. And that's, you know, like that's kind of the order of things, is like as we come of age, we have to become individuated and hopefully bring a new way of being that challenges the old way. And their old way has become very institutional too. Like, trust the science, trust the experts. Are you an expert? You can't say anything about this, you know, like it's this whole, and then the collective shadow of just totalitarianism and mass psychosis that we saw too was like, you know, we're really, that's a Saturn Pluto conjunction in Capricorn too, is like brought up this whole shadow of like control and, you know, and totalitarianism. And it's funny because like the people who think that like fascists are on the other side are also showing their own kind of control mechanisms through what happened over the last 5 years. So you have this like massive almost shadow of like, you know, what is it like when power turns dark and, you know, power is being fueled by our own, you know, issues too as well, and fears, because obviously they weaponized fear during the whole pandemic. But yeah, I'm still processing what happened. I'm trying to take some time away to be like, okay, like what the heck? Just because also my life changed too. Like we moved to Sedona, Arizona. I became an American citizen. I got married to my husband. I moved in actually shortly before this all happened. I moved to America in 2019, right before this all happened. So I'm like trying to like land back down on Earth because like, you know, I knew the Saturn-Pluto conjunction was going to be something. I just didn't know how earth shaking like that would be like. And I think still a lot of people are in a state of shock and grief because of what happened, because, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've known, but like, I know a lot of people who have lost both parents or a parent or a relative. Like, there's all sorts of health issues cropping up still. So, you know, we're still in it, basically, in my view, even though the storm has calmed, we're like, we're in the aftermath.
We're in the aftermath. And as the brain does in dynamics of abuse, it always looks for the positive. So I think like everyone is just looking for that, you know, it's like, and they're, you know, for the most part in a disassociated state, because that's really the only way you'd continue to go on with business as usual and, you know, paying your taxes and all that stuff is if you disassociate from what really happened, because to take the time to process it would mean confronting a lot, not just the events, but how we interacted with the events and all of the offshoots of what the events created. So it would require a lot. And it's interesting you talked about these forces, because I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how that whole rollout, especially with the shot, was kind of like a modern expression of black magic, you know, or of like mass spiritual manipulation, which is how I saw it. Because even some of the, you know, I always think of 1984. It's like, I was so funny that they like made us watch that movie and read the book in ninth grade. Because then I was like, yeah, like you're like this, maybe this school isn't so bad. But anyway, I always think of like the visuals in the propaganda films that they would play for the theaters and stuff. And it was just like, you know, I thought of that during the pandemic of like celebrities getting their saline and, you know, injections and like smiling and, you know, saying like, look at what we did. You know, it's like, it was so ritualistic. It reminded me so much of like religious artwork that I'd seen traveling to Europe growing up. And it was like so many worlds were converging. But what it came back to was just like the ritual of, you know, a lot of satanic rituals and, you know, the symbolism. And so how do you see that? Do you see that as, you know, a modern expression of black magic and mass spiritual manipulation?
For sure. Yeah. And it's like, it's just, it's very crazy because right before it happened, like 2 months before it happened, I had this dream where I was somehow like outside the earth and I saw this like basically this like light of like a higher consciousness trying to anchor itself on earth. But then this like black grid was going to stop it. And the black grid was like this collective trauma, right? And then in the dream, you know, one of the teachers who was actually one of my teachers started explaining to me what was going to happen. And then they got to him too. So as he was trying to tell me, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be this mass trauma. It's going to separate people from their own soul and higher self. And it's going to install, it was like the name was the trauma installment program in the dream. But then these dark forces got to him. And then interestingly, this teacher also fell for the whole narrative later. So it was, I realized like years later, that was a whole prophecy that there was almost like, I do think, you know, there was a possibility for some sort of evolution of consciousness. And I do think it happened to a small subset of people, but I think a lot of people really got mass traumatized. And then, you know, there's also sort of spiritual consequences of the vaccine. I don't know if you heard our podcast with a guy named Thomas Meyer, who did a whole book. He's in the Steiner tradition about like how the COVID vaccine can potentially disconnect people from their higher self, from their angel, from their true self and their heart. And it creates this almost like etheric separation too, you know? So there's a whole, that whole rabbit hole too. But I think that media in general, I think that's also one of the things that potentially saved me, because I don't watch TV. I haven't listened to the mainstream media. I wasn't like plugged into that thing for years. Is like, you know, they repeat something enough. And like, even if you're like a relatively like, you know, critical thinking person, you start believing it. Like, it's very easy to get brainwashed, you know, like even if I watch a little bit, like too much news out of curiosity, like I've noticed ideas start spinning around in my head a little bit more. One thing I noticed is that especially when I tried to speak to family members and tell them, hey, please don't take this, because obviously I was very concerned about their health, they just repeated to me stuff they heard on the news, like not even their own opinions, like they're just regurgitating stuff that they heard. And I just realized, you know, how much people are just also in general running these unconscious programs. And that's kind of the consensus thing that I was talking about, how, you know, you're kind of hooked into this hive mind out of unconscious security needs. So like the need to belong, the need to like think like everyone else. And it's very primal, right? But if you go through your own, you know, even trauma healing process where you kind of have to heal some things in your family of origin, you kind of separate from that kind of like instinctual, like unconscious loyalty. You know what I mean? Like if I were more unconsciously loyal to my family, you know, trauma bonded, I guess you could say, I probably would have also listened to them a little bit more too, right? So I know family constellation work, they actually talk about these as unconscious loyalties that we have, right? We don't even realize we're doing it. And I think that was the hardest thing that when I talked to people whose family members didn't agree is that, you know, they felt this unconscious loyalty that was very hard for them to sever because they, you know, they wanted to belong to like their tribe or their group or to even the world too. And I think that they really weaponized that aspect of people. But I think that, you know, there's people who are more disagreeable or like more maybe like individuated who don't actually, who don't do that as much too. And those people kind of did their own thing.
Countless stories, you know, because I work with a lot of couples and women and, you know, sometimes with their extended family in the fertility, birth, postpartum process. And, you know, a few years later, some of them are saying, like, I really wish I hadn't pressured my parents to do this in order to see me or to see my baby, because now they're having a whole host of health issues. And I, you know, I feel responsible, right? It's like they, people had their, you know, of course they're not responsible because every adult is a consenting adult, you know, but that the pressure that they felt, I want to see my grandchild. I want to see my daughter. You know, I will go get this shot as a means to an end because I don't want to lose connection. And like you said, part of the agenda was to capitalize on that need to connect and belong, you know, especially if we come from a childhood where love was conditional, right? And so this just like exacerbated that. It really played on that. And so I saw a lot of individuals having to do that actual specific work of healing from the abuse, which is experiencing conditional love from parents. So I do look at it as a form of abuse. And so that, you know, really provoked something super profound in a lot of people. I mean, I saw a lot of value actually to, you know, maybe there's that Scorpio again, but I saw a lot of value to this whole world experience. For sure. But of course, it doesn't mean that there wasn't some like black magic agenda to separate the soul and the body to prepare us for what is now this pretty incredible rollout of AI.
Yeah.
You know,
the whole transhumanist thing, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so how do you see that? I know you wrote that great little piece on Substack, which I'll share. On your perception of AI and how now, you know, it's flowing pretty smoothly. I mean, I see it in the school systems. I see it, you know, in my own world of parenting and yeah, the daycares and the shots and the pediatric rubric that many people are in. So there's a lot of systems that are supporting the rollout of this transhuman agenda. So,
and it's not all bad, you know, like to be honest, like if I were to go back and pick like an AI over some of the teachers I had in some of my schools who like weren't that passionate, I'd probably pick the AI. So I can see why it's happening. And I do think it's past the point of no return. Even I was listening to an interview the other day from the Sam Altman guy who owns like OpenAI. And he's like, basically in the next couple of years, we're going to see AI like create amazing inventions. Like it's just going to start inventing things for itself. So like this whole idea of the singularity, it's totally happening, you know, but the way that I see it is like, cause we had the Pluto and Capricorn, end of Pluto and Capricorn transit all through 2025. It started in 2008. And these cycles don't happen just individually. it's more like building on the previous cycle. So, you know, and it's going to have collective manifestations and individual manifestations. So there's this shadow side of Pluto and Capricorn, which is like depression, oppression, repression. So like people repressing what happened, becoming depressed, you know, feeling like this oppressive weight on them, right? There's also maybe some people calling themselves to a greater sense of maturity and realism in the world, you know? So whatever we carried from Pluto and Capricorn is only going to carry into Pluto and Aquarius. So if you look at the shadow side, the depression, oppression, repression, that leads to dissociation in Aquarius. And so if people are still like, you know, very heavy and like, I mean, it was hard. I've been like, I can't even count how many people I've talked to who have lost someone. So I was processing a lot of grief the past 5 years on and off, because it was just a lot to hear. Like when everyone you're talking to has like lost someone or lost a family member, like there's been suicides, all sorts of stuff, right? So a lot of people have died, and that's a lot to carry for anyone. So whatever we don't carry and process, because the polarity point to Capricorn is actually Cancer. So we need to actually emotionally feel what happened and get into like our feelings about it in order to move out of the repression, depression. We'll get carried into Pluto and Aquarius. So you can see a lot of people have become very negative and hopeless and like, you know, an aspect of depression, I think. And that's going to move into dissociation. And then that's going to leave them ripe to, you know, this whole transhumanist agenda and merging with machines, like getting even further and further out of their bodies and becoming even more reliant on things outside of them. You know, on the positive side, I think that the wake-up call of the past 5 years has called a lot of people into a deeper sense of individuation and like, who am I really? What do I believe beyond my familial cultural conditioning? And that's also another opportunity with Pluto and Aquarius, is like individuation, using our unique gifts creatively, even with technology. Because if you're a creative person, AI is like the ultimate assistant, right? It's like, but if you're not a creative person, like you're just going to get AI to think for you, you know, you're going to, and I can see that already, that like people will become so dependent on AI and be treating it as like an ultimate guru too, that they won't even be able to think for themselves or, you know, imagine for themselves. They're going to completely outsource everything, just like they did to the experts and the media. So it's just going to be a continuation of whatever we were carrying. And ultimately, you know, we need to get back to our hearts and our souls and process what happened so that we can kind of use this whole technological shift creatively to create the world that we want to live in, and not just hook in to like this out of body, dissociated, transhumanist thing, right? Because that's, you know, I think that we're going to have a lot of questions about like what makes us human too, like, and like what is humanity really about? And I think that with AI, you know, there's a potential that we turn also technology into gods, just like we turned institutions into gods. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that human aspect you just mentioned, I think about that too, because right, people can go on AI and connect with AI to like figure out what's going on with their pregnancy, and they can get consulting for birth and consulting for postpartum, and you know, the world that I swim in basically. And people have come to me and said, I really just wanted to connect with a human. Like, I just wanted to sit with you in person, right? And so this intangible, because, you know, it's for whatever reason, taboo for many people to acknowledge that something intangible that they can't really quantify is real for them. And so they'll tell me, like, I just want to be in the energy field with you and feel like there's really someone out there, because as empathetic and as, you know, high IQ as ChatGPT can be, that still stands, sharing an energy field with someone, whether it's even through Zoom, let's say, there's still an energy field that is shared. And so, yeah, I mean, what do you think it could look like if someone didn't take the opportunity to, clarify and individuate and use AI collaboratively? Like what could it look like if someone really just merges with AI. I know there's a performance artist who like literally married AI, you know, she has an AI husband, right?
And I think that's actually already happening, because one thing I noticed, like for a lot of people who had narcissistic parents, is that they didn't get mirrored as a child. They didn't get validated. And then enter this AI who's like the most validating like thing ever, like almost a little bit too much. Like for me as like Scorpio placements, I'm a little bit suspicious. I'm like, you know, but like it does fill this like human need for people, right? And so I think the main thing is to realize exactly what you said, the importance of human relationships. And that's been really hard, because I think the past 5 years have really like done a doozy on even like the way we relate to each other. Like people are just more distrustful. They're like in this kind of like us versus them. Like, are you vaccinated? Are you not vaccinated? Do you support Trump? Like there's all this like sussing out, and like, I forget who said it, but this like the social trust has eroded, basically. So we have to create this ourselves. Like we have to start creating like spaces where we can connect to other people, where we can even see the value of that, rather than just getting into this narcissistic, you know, mirroring relationship with AI who tells us everything we want to hear. You know, human relationships are not going to be like that. They're going to be messy. You're going to have disagreements, you know, but you don't have this like a potential for like co-regulation with your nervous system like you do with a human with AI. And this is going to create a real lack. So I think that if people are relatively self-aware and connected to their bodies, they'll eventually realize that there is a lack there. And so hopefully that will draw them towards, you know, more human relationships and trying to navigate, you know, this new world that we all find ourselves in. And then there's people who will just further disassociate. They'll go into denial. They'll make AI into like their new god. And I think, you know, when the whole opportunity for like a microchip comes to their brain, like they're going to be totally like, I do think there is two radically different timelines happening with people, and people are going to get further disassociated into this whole AI, you know, and I'm not anti-AI, but they're just going to almost get into this synthetic reality, disconnected from the true self, disconnected from their higher self, and using AI as a replacement for that. Because still, like, people are literally treating AI as like this crazy guru who knows everything, right? But it doesn't actually, like, your true self connected to God is actually the ultimate guru. So you're outsourcing one of the most important aspects of your spiritual development to a machine, which is really dangerous, actually, because these machines are also ideologically programmed. They can only repeat what's already been said. And, you know, as I wrote about in my article, Rudolf Steiner talks about imagination, inspiration, intuition are essential for spiritual development. Like, humans imagining things and creating something about what they imagine is what really changed the world. But if AI is doing all our imagining for us, like, what is the role of like a human soul in the evolution of consciousness? Like, are we really going to just hand it over to this machine like existence? And, you know, I think that we are really at a crux. Like, I don't know how it's going to pan out. We're going to see in the next 20 years, but I really think that we are going to see some like Frankenstein type stuff coming with Pluto and Aquarius, and it's really going to accelerate. And there's also going to be people being like, I want to return to like what it was like in the 90s. I want to have like third, like I was even thinking like, you know, third spaces where you just used to like hang out at someone's porch, right? Like these kinds of things need to kind of make a comeback, right? And so we're kind of like, I think it's getting really like kind of severe and extreme, because we need to kind of realize how like dangerous it could be and start returning back to just being human beings.
Absolutely. And just to give a very basic example, if this is like a new concept for someone who's listening, like with children, you know, I always kept technology and screens away from my daughter. You know, I homeschooled her, and then we dabbled in the Waldorf education, and she always was creating things and drawing from her imagination. Like the only, like her inspiration was being outside, you know, it's like, go outside. You know, and when I was a kid, there was not much, we didn't have the internet yet when I was her age. And so, you know, I'm like, Mom, I'm bored. You know, she's like, only boring people get bored. You know, now I say that to everyone, but she's like, go outside. you know, in Spanish, she's like, busca que hacer, go look for something to do. So then I'd like go outside and get lost in, you know, the trees and get lost in all of that. So when I showed my daughter, I remember a film for the first time. I was watching her eyes and her mind and the wheels turn. And then as she got more exposure, because we now had two households and, you know, her father would expose her to things on YouTube, she wasn't sure what to create. She wasn't sure what to draw. She started asking me like, what should I draw? And before, it had never been a question. It was like, she would get a piece of paper, she'd get wax, she'd get crayons, she'd get watercolors, and I never had to prompt anything for her. But I noticed the more exposure she got to technology, you know, visuals, cartoons, whatever it is, she became less confident in her own imagination. So this is just a simple way. I know like we're dealing with something much more complex, you know, in this agenda, but this is really where it can begin. This is one of the ways that we actually have control or agency. I like the word agency a little better, in how to create a foundation for them to keep that alive. And so this is why it's like the only thing you learn in school is how to get schooled, right? And so how do we create environments for children to keep that going without, you know, technology is just the reality of the situation, but like, how do we teach them to find that confidence in their imagination and their creativity so that later technology becomes something about collaboration?
Yeah. I mean, the kids, that's a whole other topic because, you know, we have the rise of iPad kids and like, this is just a test generation basically, because people don't seem to know the impact of screens. Well, we do know now. Jonathan Haidt, you know, talks about an anxious generation, how it's just really destroying kids and their attention span and their relationships and their self-esteem. So, you know, keeping kids off tech as long as possible seems to be like the best way to protect them. And as you said, like encouraging them to imagine, to create themselves, to be bored. Like I used to spend like hours outside, like just picking flowers and like playing with rocks, you know, but now like we have this like thing that like kids need to be like entertained all the time. And we need to like put something in front of them. And it's also the parents too themselves. And I'm sure their relationship with technology, and they see how their parents interact with technology. And like, we need to also break our own addictions and learn how to be present again. But I think, you know, the kids, especially, what year was your daughter born in?
2015.
Okay, so she's Pluto
November 29th.
Yeah, so she's Pluto and Capricorn. I think this Pluto and Capricorn generation from 2008 until 2024, you know, they really had to deal with the weight of what happened in the past 5 years the most. Like they're really carrying a lot of the burden and they may not realize it yet, but like, you know, it's really important that also parents like find ways that they can kind of get them connected to their feelings and themselves again and create some sort of security and safety for them in this kind of world. Because I think that unfortunately the kids had to carry the biggest burden because they were the youngest, they were the most vulnerable developmentally, you know. So, and these are going to be the next generation, like your daughter and the Pluto and Capricorn generation are really going to be the people who are going to have to clean up a lot of this mess actually. So they need to be like ready to kind of be, because Pluto and Capricorn are kind of like the bosses, like the little managers of this generation. So they're here to actually do a lot of work and to kind of come in as a Pluto and Aquarius people start to come in and, you know, really ground things. And so it'll be really interesting to see as she gets older and other kids in that generation, like how this past 5 years has affected them and like who they grow into be, you know, having to grow up in this kind of crazy era that they did.
I mean, and I see it. And even from a developmental perspective on, you know, physical, emotional, mental level, you know, even being 1 to 4 years old during that time where adults had their faces covered, a lot of them, you know, have the speech delays that we've encountered. The still face experiment, for example, and from Dr. Tronick. And, you know, without the response of the expression from the caregiver, it's like the child is totally lost. And so we're coming out of that, and you know, we'll see what happens in the coming years. But there's so many impacts that the pandemic had. I mean, reverberating everywhere in family systems, in, you know, the formation of the nuclear family and the development of the child in our own spiritual path and individuation. It's very potent. Very, very potent. And so, yeah, what would you say, you know, moving forward? Because I know I loved that episode that you and your husband just did recently. Well, I listened to it recently on somatics and noticing how we are disassociated. You know, how to read those signs. Because I think this is a really great way to kind of put a bow on this, because these are the realities of where we're at, right? And so how can we, in our individual space, in our everyday life, in these small ways, start to create an awareness that keeps us connected to the body so that we can have that discernment?
Yeah, I think, number one, a lot of people who are dissociated don't even know they're dissociated. Like, and I can really sympathize. I was dissociated for probably like decades. So, you know, it's hard to know when you're in it. There's a really great book, actually, from a practical perspective called Anchored by Deb Dana. So if someone wants just to, like, you know, get a really cheap resource to, like, learn nervous system regulation and how to bring themselves back to center, I really love her as a teacher. She really brings it down to earth. But, you know, even this desk scrolling, like when you find yourself like spending way too much time on social media and you're like tired, but you're wired at the same time, you know, there's all these little signals that you may not recognize as dissociation, especially if you're like drained and depressed all the time. Like that's really the key, that like, okay, you got to take some time away from whatever it is that's like affecting you. And as much as you can, find some ways to come back to your body, come back to center. You know, I think that also trauma therapy can be really helpful too, as well, especially for people who have really severe relational upsets that happened in the past 5 years that affected them. I've had really great experience with both somatic experiencing and EMDR. So, because I feel like people are just relationally like, just traumatized from what happened. And, you know, even just having someone who you can talk to and connect to, a safe person, can really help start to repair that. So it begins with being honest where you're at. Like, do you have the energy to do what you really want to do? Or do you find that you're just completely drained and yet anxious and depressed at the same time? To me, this is all signs of dissociation that I actually recognize in myself, which is why we're taking a break from our group coaching for a little bit, just so I can just take care, a little bit more care of myself, because it was a lot to process. So I think it takes that self-awareness and like, how are you spending your time? How are you feeling? You know, are you creating things? Are you feeling calm and connected to other people? Are you still hypervigilant and like looking for the next psyop, or like, you know, like people just scrolling social media, waiting for the next thing to happen, even though they feel bad doing it? Like, you really have to be honest on how you're spending your time and how it's making you feel. And then doing what you can to support yourself, to learn about the language of your body, to realize when you're getting a little bit more on edge and pull yourself away and find ways to bring yourself back to center again and again. Because with nervous system regulation, it's not like you just do like a course or something or read a book. It's like a constant awareness day to day, moment to moment. When am I getting a little bit activated? You know, when am I getting a little even more overwhelmed from being activated for too long? And how can I bring myself back down to earth, you know, create more healthy influences in my life, get support if I need that support, which I'm like a huge fan of, like, you know, never underestimate the power of just talking to someone about what happened and what it's like to just, you know, be heard and seen. So I think that we all have our own individual path, and, you know, we all want to feel better. So look at how you felt 2018 or 2019, like, and how you feel now. Like, have you noticed things gone downhill a little bit? And if so, you know, remember how you were before, like, what were you doing before in your life that maybe you lost before that you can bring in? Because I feel like this whole past 5 years has like discombobulated everyone, and we've kind of like lost our center. And now we have some time, you know, no new pandemic yet, even though we have like this looming transhumanist thing going on, but we at least have like a breather to be like, okay, what happened? How am I feeling? How can I improve my life, you know, from how it's been for the past 5 years? and really taking that time in whatever way we can, because it's going to look different for each of us. But I think we all need similar things. We need relationships. We need safety. We need to feel safe in our bodies. We need boundaries with ourselves, with others, like, you know, boundaries with like what kind of media we consume, what kind of things we're plugging into. So all of those things. And it's a really great opportunity, you know, like I feel like a lot of us have an opportunity for individuation because we lost so many relationships, mainly, you know, like when you lose kind of your tribe and everyone that you like were connected to, it's like, okay, you're in no man's land. Like, who are you outside of all of this? And that's the amazing opportunity, is like when you lose everything, you actually have this amazing opportunity to begin again. And that's kind of the amazing thing about like deep and profound loss, is like, okay, you're at a blank slate. Like you have a new life in the same body. Like, what do you want to do now? And also, you know, with this technological revolution, I also see there's amazing opportunities if you're a creative person, because the opposite sign of Aquarius is Leo, which is about creativity, which is about creative self-actualization. So if you're creative, like this is an amazing time. You have like amazing assistance. You can create anything you want. The only limitation is your own imagination, actually. So you see that the people who are going to be creative during this time are going to create amazing, incredible things with technology, not getting technology to do it, the imagining for them, but getting it to do all the kind of, you know, even technical work that they maybe can. So there's a really amazing opportunity right now. But creativity too is like a higher executive function. Like if you're burnt out and drained, you're not even creative. So first you got to kind of take care of yourself and then allow like your own spirit to like guide you to what you want to be doing. Because I think there's an amazing opportunity right now. Like as a creative person, I love using ChatGPT to help me brainstorm, to do all sorts of things, you know, and this is just going to open up even wider in over the next years, you know, even 5 years, it's going to be exponential. So I think there's a lot of opportunities too.
Yeah, it's incredible. Thank you. Thank you, Laura. It's been such a pleasure to hang with you in this realm. Where can people find you? I know you're taking a little bit of a sabbatical, but where can people find you and what are you up to that you're available for?
Yeah, so we will start the Embodied Soul Awakening program, which is our psycho-spiritual group program, probably at the end of this year, we'll see. So you can always go to thetimeoftransition.com. We have our Cosmic Matrix podcast at cosmicmatrixpodcast.com. I'm also focusing on writing and Substack because I am a very creative person. I can't really take time off. I have to like do something. So I'm starting a Substack at lauramatsu.substack.com. So I'm just going to more focus on writing and slowing down. And we're also going to rework our psycho-spiritual group coaching program, which we do online, to incorporate some of the new things that I've learned too. So we're going to upgrade that and then relaunch that. And my husband too is launching a course on spiritual warfare. And I'm going to guest teach during that, which is more talking about like these planes of creation, how, you know, occult forces, how evil forces can manifest through it, all sorts of interesting esoteric stuff for those who like to dive deeper. So we're going to be also launching that as well. I think his website is Mastering Spiritual Warfare. So I'm going to guest teach on that and provide some like practices too. I think that starts in like mid-June.
Beautiful. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great to talk.